We're ready to get started. We'll be in 2 Samuel chapter 18 tonight. All right, so part of a review and kind of think about what we've been going over. Remember, how long it was from the event with Amnon and Tamar all the way to when Absalom rebelled. Remember we had that chart up there? About 11 years, right? So that was a long time. So remember, that's what started this whole thing was when Amnon went in with Tamar. And the result of that, David didn't take action on that. So Absalom was angry with that. So after a couple of years, he took action, and he had his servants kill Amnon. And then he runs off, goes away for several years, comes back. Who was the instigator of him coming back that time? Do you remember? We talk about him a good bit tonight. That's why I'm mentioning. It was Joab. Remember Joab's very close counselor and commander, captain of David's armies. Joab helped get Absalom back because he saw what an effect it was having on David. And Absalom asked him, actually. Absalom asked for him to help him. So he comes back, but still the relationship's not good between Absalom and David at all. And then sometime after that, we see that Absalom rebels. He's in line for the throne, but he goes ahead and takes action to take the throne from David by force. So David, Amnon makes the preparations. He gets everything in place. He goes up to Hebron, remember to worship, so he said. And during that time, he has that proclamation go out that Absalom is the king. David hears about it. He and his men exit out of the city. And we saw that, how they exited out to the east over the Jordan and crossed over. So David and his men go across into the Transjordanic area over into Mahanaim. And they set up in that city. So David's out there with his army. Absalom and his army are there in Jerusalem. So now in chapter... at the end of 17 and into 18, Absalom gets the advice. Who's his trusted counselor? We read who defected from David, who betrayed David. That was Ahithophel, right? So Ahithophel now is counseling Absalom, and he tells him, you know, go about it this way. You know, we need to take some men, go after David now, and, you know, do kind of a, you know, just go get David, take him out. Everybody else will fall in line behind you. Well, Hushai stays with Absalom in his kingdom, but Hushai is actually, you know, still loyal to David. Hushai misdirects Ahithophel's counsel, and Absalom believes and takes to heart what Hushai says. And Hushai's advice was, take your army, let's build up the army, and let's go and let's wipe him out, all right? Which would take a bit more time. So they do that. And so Absalom and his army, they build up forces, and now they're going across the Jordan. They cross the Jordan and go after David. So David over in Mahanaim, a couple of more names there. Remember, Joab is one of David's commanders, captains, and he is over David's host of armies. He's the main one over David's army. But David splits his forces into three groups. And he puts Joab over one, Abishai over another, and Ittai, the Gittite. So those first three names there are now have a group of soldiers under them. And that's how David goes about. And David is going to want, David wants to go fight. He's going to go with them in this battle and fight with them. But they discourage him from that, and they convince David not to go. They said, David, your life is worth 10,000 of our lives. You cannot go into this battle with us, because you need to stay in the city here in Mahanaim and direct us from there. So David requiesced to that, and he stays back. Amasa is actually David's nephew. Remember, everybody here is kin to each other, right? I mean, they're all brothers and cousins and so forth. Well, Amasa is David's nephew, but Amasa is the commander of Saul's army, all right? So, Absalom's army. I'm going to mess up names again. So Amasa is the commander of Absalom's army, who's taken off across the Jordan to go after David and his men. All right, we'll get to some of these others here as we go along. All right, so David doesn't go into the battle with them. They convince him not to. This is in chapter 18 now. So the people go out in verse 6. They go out and they meet up in the forest of Ephraim. And if you remember your geography, Ephraim is on the west side of the Jordan, but the way the text reads here, it seems like they've crossed over over the Jordan, and they're over on the east side. So it seems like there's a forest, an area over there that's called the Forest of Ephraim, over on the east side of the Jordan. So they're over there, and that's where this whole battle takes place, and it's spread out over a really large area here. So, but before David sends out his men, he's kind of at the gate, and all his soldiers and all the people loyal to him. And you got to think about all of these men who are with him. Now, some of these, remember, you talk about the mighty men of David, Ittai the Gittite. He's not even an Israelite. He's a foreigner, really, but he's loyal to David. And all these other men are loyal, fiercely loyal to David. And so they pass before him, but before they get out, David tells his three commanders, Ittai, Abishai, and Joab. He gives them specific instructions about Absalom. What does he tell them? Yeah. Don't hurt Absalom. That's really the message, right? Deal gently with Absalom. All right. So, and it wasn't just a quiet conversation between the four of them. He tells it in the hearing of the whole company. So everybody hears this. All right. That becomes an important aspect here as we go along. So Absalom's men, they go out and they meet in this forest, and Absalom's men are no match for David's. David divides up in these three groups of these commanders. He's divided them up, and he has men over hundreds and over thousands. So we're numbered in the thousands in David's army. We're numbered in Absalom's army, tens of thousands. We don't know exactly how many. It's never really told how many total there are. But as they go into this battle in this forest of Ephraim, it's a slaughter. David's men overcome Absalom's army, just, you know, and deal a huge heavy blow. In fact, they kill 20,000 of Absalom's army. But you got to remember, who are they killing? You know, it's brother against brother, cousin against cousin. You know, it's, you know, family, you know, civil war kind of things that we can, compare it to. So as a result of this, Absalom is fleeing and he's running. And as he flees, he's on a mule, of some sort. And as he's going through and riding through the forest, he gets caught up and his head gets caught up in the trees. And, so he's left hanging there. Mule runs out from under him. So he's hanging by his head in this forest. And one of the men come upon him. One of David's, men come upon him, see him there. He doesn't do anything. He runs back and he finds Joab and he tells Joab. And, yeah, let's see, which verse is this? All right, verse 10 and chapter 18. He sees Absalom hanging though, he reports that to Joab. And Joab says, you saw him. Why did you not strike him there to the ground? Joab wanted Absalom dead, obviously. And he says, I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a warrior's belt. So Joab would have, you know, rewarded him for taking Absalom out. But what does this guy say? He says, not on your life. Verse 12, he says, even if I should receive 1,000 pieces of silver, I would not put out my hand against the king's son. Why is he not going to put his hand down against the king's son? Because he heard what David told his commanders about not touching him. He said, protect the young man Absalom. So he didn't harm him. Well, he goes on to say, and besides the fact, if I had done that and I came back to report it to David, he didn't trust Joab to stand behind him. To protect him. He thinks David would have killed him if he came back with that news that he had killed his son. He's probably right about that, with the decisions David's been making. But he doesn't trust Joab to stand up for him. He thinks Joab would have just thrown him under the bus and, you know, off of his head. So he didn't trust Joab to stand up for him. Well, so Joab says, look, I don't have time to argue with you. And so Joab takes off. He grabs 3 spears. He's got his armor bearers with him. He's got about 10 of them carrying his stuff who surround him, carry all his, you know, supplies and protect him. So he goes off with them, goes and finds Absalom, 3 spears through the heart of Absalom at Joab's hand. And then the men with him, they bring him down, they beat him and finish him off and kill him. So Joab, kills, and his men kill Absalom right there. Well, with that, Joab blows the trumpet, or has the trumpet blown, that will stop the fighting. It'll cause his men, they stop the fighting. So there's no more killing going on. And essentially that's, you know, victory for them since they've routed them, in such a way. They took Absalom. Put him in a pit, covered him with stones, and at that, all the Israelites, you know, from there in Jerusalem, from Absalom's army, you know, they run and scatter, and they go back to their own. So, with that, the battle's over, the victory is theirs. David's still back in Mahanaim, back across the, still over there in Mahanaim. So they need to send word to him. Well, Ahimaaz, remember who Ahimaaz is? He's one of those priest's sons who was part of that network of spies that they had set up. Remember that? So Ahimaaz was one of those, one of the runners for him. So he wants Joab to let him go and give David the news. Well, Joab knows better than to do that, because not only is he going to tell him that they've won the battle, but Joab knows that the first question out of David's mouth is going to be, what about Absalom? And he doesn't want Ahimaaz to be the bearer of that news to David for good reason. So Joab sends a Cushite soldier with that message, sends him off to go tell David. Well, Ahimaaz presses him on the matter a bit and says, you know, let me go and tell David this. Joab relents and sends him off. So Ahimaaz shoots off a different path, and he essentially beats the other guy, the Cushite, there to David. So they arrive there, and there's a watchman out on the city of Mahanaim there with David. There's a watch guard, and he sees somebody running toward him, and he tells David, well, there's a runner coming, and he tells him it looks like Ahimaaz, and he's by himself. And so David immediately thinks, it must be good news. And the watch guard keeps watching, and he says, there's another one. And David says, he's by himself, it must be more good news. David's an optimist. So there's two runners coming. Well, Ahimaaz comes first. He bows before David, the king, and he tells him in verse 28, he says, all is well. And he said, blessed is the Lord your God who has delivered up the men who lifted their hands against my Lord the king. You've been delivered from your enemies. And so David says, first thing, just like Joab expected, is it well with the young man Absalom? What about my son? And Ahimaaz answers him. He says, Joab sent the king's servant, sent me, and I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was. So essentially Ahimaaz skirts around it and doesn't answer him. And the king says, turn aside, stay here. And he turns, and so he's beside David. The Cushite arrives, the other runner. So he comes, and he says, let the Lord the king receive good news, for the Lord has freed you this day from the hand of all those who rose up against you. The victory is yours. You've been delivered. And David asks him, is it well with the young man Absalom? There's only one thing on David's mind. He doesn't ask about anybody except Absalom. And the Cushite answered, he said, let the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be as that young man. So Absalom's dead. And David immediately is overcome with grief. And, you know, based on everything that the decisions he's been making regarding Absalom, and the path that he's been choosing, you know, to take in all of this, David cares for Absalom extremely, to a very deep feeling and love for his son. And that feeling and that relationship that David has is preventing him from making logical decisions that are best for his country, the kingdom. It's preventing him from making just decisions regarding, you know, everything that's happening. And here, David completely sort of just falls within himself, and he's overcome with this grief, and he goes off by himself. He wishes, verse 33, David wishes, he says, I wish it was me instead of Absalom. He prefers that he would have died instead of Absalom. It's that deep of a love that he has. So the battle's over. Everyone starts coming back into the city. You know, the army returns. Now, after a victory, such as this, what, you know, how do they, what, how does an army return to the city after a victory? You know, pretty victorious in their celebration. It might have been in a normal situation. It might have been depressed somewhat because they had been fighting their own people. But in as such, because of David's, and all the, you know, it gets out of David's grief and his mourning that's happening. The army sort of sneaks back into Mahanaim. They sort of sneak back in like they've been beaten. Right? So they're all feeling, not victorious, not celebratory at all, but like they've done something wrong. And they go back into the city, and Joab learns of, you know, the word gets back to Joab too, of what David's doing here. And Joab goes in and talks to David. And he tells him, he rebukes David. He goes into him in verse 5. And he really lays it on the line to David that he should not be, even though he's grieving, he should mask that. And because these men who are fiercely, fiercely loyal to him just put their lives on the line and fought for him and brought him this victory. And this is what Joab says. He says, "Today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants who today have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters. By loving those who hate you," that is Absalom, "and by hating those who love you. For you have shown today that the princes and servants are nothing to you. For I know this day that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased." So that's what Joab tells the king who could off with his head, you know, at any point for disrespect or any other thing. But he lays it on the line. "David, you'd be happier if we were all dead and Absalom was alive." And David takes that to heart. Joab keeps talking in verse 7. He says, "Therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants, all these who have fought for you. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, surely not a man will pass the night with you. And this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now." He warns him, if you don't go out and make this right and encourage all of these men who fought for you and thank them, essentially, and lead them, then before the night's over, they're going to abandon you. Now, you think about the situation of the whole kingdom, you know, just in general, back in Jerusalem, here in Mahanaim. What is the situation just in general of everything? Back in Jerusalem, what had happened? They had pretty much were of the opinion there in the city that, you know what, Absalom came in and David ran. And so the people of the kingdom pretty much accepted Absalom as their king. Well, what's the situation now? Absalom's dead. David had fled and he's off, you know, out there. But what are they supposed to do? They're kind of lost. You can kind of see that, can't you? That the people and the citizens of the Israelites, what are we supposed to do now? We accepted somebody, the king Absalom, he's dead. We kind of, you know, David fled. He's out. You know, where are we? What are we supposed to do now? Well, with this, David hears these rumblings and these complaints that are happening. He gets word of it. So he goes ahead and he sends word to his people from Judah. And he sends, that's where he's from. So he sends word to them. He says, why have you not, his own relatives, you know, the people closest to him in Judah there, why haven't you taken the lead on bringing me back and putting me back on the throne? All right. So he sends that message to him. And at the same time, remember, Amasa is his nephew. Amasa was who? He was the captain of Absalom's army, who he was fighting against. Well, Amasa's from down there. So at the same time, he sends down there and he says, Amasa, I know what you did, but we're going to put that behind us. And I want you to be captain over all my hosts. So he appoints Amasa. I paraphrased that, and I didn't say how David said it. But he puts Amasa in charge of all his hosts, his army. Now, who was his captain of the host of all his army? That was Joab, right? So he puts Amasa, who was fighting against him, as captain over his army, and Joab is sort of booted. Now, I don't know why he did that. It doesn't tell us why he did that. I can think of a couple of reasons why he did that, but they're just my thoughts. One would be, as a possibility, and like I said, they're just what I can think of, but how could he repair this rift and this tumult that's going on in the nation right now? You've got a division here between those who followed Absalom and those who followed David, don't we? You bring the captain of that army into your close circle, that'd do a lot, wouldn't it? So maybe that's a reason. It might be that he was booting Joab out. What did Joab do that David told him specifically not to do? He told him to take care of Absalom. And Joab did the opposite. He disobeyed the direct order from the king. So that, both of those things are kind of on the table. Exactly why he did it is not told in the scriptures for us. But so the battle's over. David's appointing via the messengers. He's appointing Amasa over his army now. And so the men of Judah do sort of take that role, that leadership, and they go over and they kind of lead the charge of bringing David back and bringing him back into Jerusalem. So David and his men start coming back from Mahanaim on the east side of the Jordan, and they start coming back, and they're going to cross over. They have to cross over the Jordan, right, and then come back, into Jerusalem. So it's a good little trek. So they get to the Jordan, and several people, lots of people, come out to meet him there. And the people who come to meet him there, pretty interesting who they are. In chapter 19, in verse 15, he comes over. He returns and he comes as far as the Jordan, right? So Judah came to Gilgal in order to go meet the king to bring the king across the Jordan. So Judah is there, or represented as from the tribe of Judah. And verse 16, Shemaiah, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. Who is Shimei? That was a last lesson, two lessons ago, I guess. Shimei, remember him? When David was leaving and, fleeing from Absalom, going out, he was the guy who was throwing rocks at him and cursing David as he went out of the city. And they wanted, you know, his men with him wanted him to kill him, but David said, let him be. And so the whole, it seems like for a long part of the journey going across the Jordan, this guy was pelting him and, you know, cursing him. Well, so he meets David at the Jordan as David and his men are coming back to go to Jerusalem. And Shimei's there. And also Ziba. All right. So who is Ziba? To think back. All right. Ziba was the servant of Mephibosheth. Remember what happened there? The servant of Mephibosheth, Ziba, had come when David was leaving. He came out with supplies for David's army. But Ziba essentially said, you know what? Mephibosheth isn't coming. He's not going to go with you. He's not going to support, be loyal to you, David. He's going to stay in Jerusalem. And essentially the word from Mephibosheth was, Mephibosheth thought that Israel was going to make him the king, that the throne was going to return to Mephibosheth. Now, who is he? He's Jonathan's son, Saul's grandson. So Mephibosheth thought that the kingdom was coming back to Saul, you know, and Mephibosheth being the only one, he would be king. That was the word that Ziba had told David as he was, you know, fleeing from Absalom. Well, Ziba, so David's coming back. Ziba's here along with Shimeah, and they are beside themselves trying to help and get David and all his stuff and all his men. They're kind of helping ferry him across all their stuff across the Jordan there. And they plead with David to forgive them. They plead with David to forgive them for what they've done and to welcome them back. And David does. He does not kill them. But the other one who's here also is Mephibosheth himself. In verse 20, well, before I get to that, Abishai, Shimeah is pleading his case for David and asking for forgiveness and all this, Abishai, remember who Abishai is? He's one of the captains, one of David's commanders. Abishai, his question to David, he says, should not Shimeah be put to death for this because he cursed the Lord's anointed? So Abishai, that's a valid question on the part of Abishai, because this guy was cursing David the whole way, you know, as David was leaving. Abishai said, shouldn't he be put to death now for cursing God's anointed? Now, in David's past, how strongly did David feel about God's anointed? He felt very strongly about whom God had anointed to be king. David respected that an awful lot. Remember when he was hiding from Saul, Saul was trying to kill him and all that. David respected God's authority and whom he had chosen. Abishai was using that in his question. Shouldn't he be put to death? Because he was cursing God's anointed. Well, David, all that's true, right, in David's history. But David says to him in verse 22, what have I to do with you, that you should this day be an adversary to me? Should any man be put to death in Israel today? So David says, no one else is going to die in this, everything that's happened. No one's going to die today. And he swears to Shimeah that he will not die, that he will not kill him. So, David is showing a lot of mercy right now. Well, Mephibosheth, all right, is also here. And so David asks him, Remember how close David and Jonathan, Mephibosheth's father, were? David and Jonathan, they were very, very close. And when Jonathan had died, David had, taken care of Mephibosheth. And remember, Mephibosheth was lame, and he couldn't walk. So David had cared for him. Well, so David just straight up asked Mephibosheth, "Why did you not go with me?" Right? Now, there were some who wanted to go with David when he was going, across the Jordan. And David said, you know what? I need you to stay here, or you'll be a burden with me. Stay here. And he might have said that to Mephibosheth, because Mephibosheth couldn't walk. He was lame. So he might have said, but the question is, why didn't you want to go with me? Right? So why didn't you go with me? And Mephibosheth told him, he said, in verse 26, it's pretty interesting. He says, "Oh, my lord, the king, my servant deceived me." I presume he's talking about Ziba. That was his servant who had come to David before, right? "My servant deceived me, for," he said, "I will saddle a donkey for myself, and I may ride on it and go with the king, because your servant is lame. Moreover, he has slandered your servant to my lord the king, but my lord the king is like an angel of God. Therefore, do what is good in your sight." Mephibosheth says, my servant, he betrayed me in saying that I wouldn't come with you. Ziba had gotten all that stuff together and came to David and reported that Mephibosheth said this or that. Mephibosheth had never said that. Mephibosheth, apparently, and what he's saying here, he wanted to go. He would have gone with David. And all that about him wanting the throne, Mephibosheth is saying he didn't say any of that. He was slandered. So David replies to him, and Mephibosheth is still talking and still, explaining. And the king says to him, David, he says, "Why do you still speak of your affairs? I have decided that you and Ziba shall divide the land." So the land that they had, David just simply straight up says, he says, "The land that you have is going to be split between the two of you." Between Ziba's going to have half of it, and Mephibosheth would have the other half of the land. I think, you may have another idea, David didn't know what the truth was. And so he just splits it, and one can have one part of the property, the land, and the other can have the other. Because he'd gotten two different stories and he didn't know which one was the truth. I'm not sure he wanted to take the time to figure it all out. So here it is. You take half, you take half. And, and that's it. But Mephibosheth says, what does he reply to that? He says, Ziba can have all of it. I'm just glad that you're back here. And if he was feigning concern for David, he was doing a good job. It seems like he was sincere in that, just from the text. There's one other person who was there welcoming David back as he crossed the Jordan and coming back into Jerusalem, and that was Barzillai. Barzillai was the man who met David at Mahanaim and provided everything that David needed for, food and shelter and everything that he needed. Barzillai was the one who was helping David there in Mahanaim, where he had set up kind of his headquarters through all this. So David was very indebted to him and thankful. And he told him, now Barzillai, he's an old man. He's like 80 plus years old. So David tells him, he says, "Come back with me, live with me in the kingdom, I'll take care of you from here on." Well, Barzillai, he's about ready to go on and receive his eternal reward. And he wants to go back to his family and be buried, with his people. And so David, but he does say, "Here, take my servant." I don't know if it says his servant, it might be his son, Chimham. But he sends Chimham with him, with David, in his place, that David can show this kindness to someone in his family who is younger. So David does that and takes him, and they go ahead and cross back over the Jordan, and David is set back up as king. The problems are not over at all for David in this whole affair. There's still a lot of tumult and, you know, division and difficulty. Some of that we'll talk about on Sunday. All right. Well, thank you for your attention. We'll stop there.